You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The Dedalus Court Theater opened in Central Park on June 18, 1962, as home to the Public Theater's Free Shakespeare in the Park program. And in the half century since, it's become one of the city's most beloved institutions, not to mention one of its hottest tickets, with people lining up at dawn to get seats for that evening's performance. Next Monday marks the theater's 50th anniversary, and to celebrate, there'll be a gala performance of Romeo and Juliet featuring alumni of Shakespeare in the Park, and I'm pleased to welcome two of those veterans, Kevin Klein and Jeffrey Wright, back to our show, along with Oscar Eustace, Artistic Director of the Public Theater. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oscar, when Joseph Papp founded the Public Theater and Shakespeare in the Park all those years ago, did he see it as a short-term project, or was he predicting that it would be as popular as it has become over the years?
Well, by the time the Delacorte opened in 1962, he knew what he had. And really the sort of climactic event was the struggle with Robert Moses in 1959, when he had, at that point, the Shakespeare Festival had been performing in the parks for 3 years for free, no stage or just a stage on the back of the truck. And Robert Moses insisted that Joe charge for it and split the money with the Parks Department. Joe refused, and by the time Joe actually beat Robert Moses in the appellate court, the city had rallied around the idea of Free Shakespeare in the Park as core to the civic identity. And at that point, Joe knew what he had.
Although no one could have predicted that we'd be here 50 years later talking about it.
Unbelievable. The success of it, I think, is it's been a fantastic theater, and the Public Theater is a great institution. But I think the success we really have to look at is the success of the idea. That idea, the idea that great culture belongs to everybody, that there should be no economic barrier preventing anybody from having access to the best that the American theater has to offer, is a really infectious and powerful idea, and nobody's been able to quell it.
Well, part of the success has also been that it's been able to attract some of the best actors. So it isn't just you find some hot young actors, but you also find pretty famous ones. The first production had George C. Scott.
James Earl Jones, who
that's
qualified as hot young actors at the time. They weren't famous
actors
at the time,
no,
exactly.
They were unknown. Oh.
And that's been one of the beauties of the Public, is it's been a place where young actors can come and establish themselves, practice their craft, where senior actors can come in the middle of their careers, and now where we have some of the greatest actors that are with us in America who are able to come back and make the Delacorte home throughout their careers.
Kevin, you were here recently to talk about your most recent film, Darling Companion, but you've appeared in quite a few productions at the New York Shakespeare Festival. How many in all? And it's my sense you may have done more than any other actor.
I've been in everything there. No, I've lost count. I think I read somewhere 8 or 9 times.
In the park.
And I've done it.
And why do you
keep
coming back?
It's like home, I guess. It's a magical, wonderful experience. My first job was carrying a spear in the Wars of the Roses, and that was the summer that Joe did the marathon, where we started at 7 p.m. and went till 6:30, and then the cast of Hair came on stage and sang Let the Sunshine In. We did all three parts of Henry VI and Richard III. I was hooked, I think, well before that. It was just an extraordinary event.
You'll be playing Romeo to Meryl Streep's Juliet in next Monday's gala performance, just a couple of talented teenagers.
Yeah.
Have you ever
senior actors as some...
Have you ever played
Oscar
Romeo before?
I never have, and I never... I thought I'd missed my opportunity.
Yeah, well, people grow into certain roles.
Exactly.
You have to wait until you can do a Lear.
Exactly.
You're doing it in reverse.
I'm a late bloomer, I hope.
How many of these productions have you done with Meryl?
I don't think... Meryl and I did a Shakespeare evening of sort of love scenes between just some of the sort of Shakespeare's heroines and heroes some years ago. But I
say you're Mother Courage.
Yes, we did Mother... Oh, we've done Mother Courage and...
The Seagull
in the park, but not Shakespeare. This will be a first.
Now, Jeffrey, although many people associate you with films like Basquiat, you've described yourself as primarily a stage actor. Won a Tony for Angels in America. What appeals to you about doing Shakespeare in the park?
Well, I'm not sure if I describe myself in that way, but I've been described in that way. I'm an actor. I, you know, take on a good story and try to make the best of it. But what appeals to me about the place is the absence of matinees, which I think is appealing to most actors. It just represents, you know, as Oscar was describing, kind of, you know, the vortex of American Shakespearean theater. And it's an opportunity for us to exercise in a purely an American voice through Shakespeare, which is a really rare and difficult thing for American actors, for us to define ourselves in our own terms, as opposed to, you know, being, you know, aspiring Brits and, you know, kind of bringing these unreasonable expectations and affectations to the voice. Rather, it's an opportunity to really find our own American aesthetic within it. So it's a very exciting place.
Although it has been pointed out that perhaps Shakespeare was writing for people who spoke a lot more like Americans. If you just look at the rhymes, for example, they're not modern British rhymes. They are more typical American rhymes.
Sure. Well, there are the theories about what Chincoteague Island down in Virginia and some of these isolated communities that speak this this older English, and I think that may be true. But what I find exciting is the opportunity, and it's something that I discovered there really, you know, under the tutelage of Chris Walken the first year that I worked there, was the ways in which it's possible to absent any, you know, hyper reverence of Shakespeare and the language, there's a way to reclaim it and kind of destroy it and reassemble it in a very personal way. And as Americans, that's through, you know, our own intonations and our own inflections and things like that. And no one had done that in a way that I saw Walken do that. I think it was 91, 92, I played, you know, the third Cypriot gentleman. He was Iago to the late Raul Julia's Othello. Mm-hmm. And it was so incredibly exciting for me as a young apprentice actor, if you will, you know, one of my first jobs in New York, wow, to every night watch Chris, you know, reinvent Shakespearean language in his own. He said at one point, I think the line was, for the love of his Desdemona. And it's he had reason, but, you know, it got to the point where, you know, we younger actors were standing, you know, down in the bombs, like looking up at night, to the point where he had to say to the stage manager, he said, "What are these idiots down here watching me? Get them out of there." But, you know, it was a great schoolhouse, if you will, for us, and that's what the Delacorte has to offer for young actors.
Well, how is does performing outdoors affect the way you approach a role? How is it different from doing something indoors?
Aside from the knowledge back at them in the back of your head that this is how Shakespeare did it, most of his plays before they were in the Inns of Court, they were outdoors in the middle of the day, no less.
Although the rich people had covering, they were sitting in the back.
Yes. But they were losing out on this wonderful little rainfall and whatever other haps that nature would loose on us. It's magical. I mean, I can't tell you how many stories about characters who are invoking nature, whether it's Richard III and Lady Anne, who says, "Either heaven with lightning strike the murderer dead, or earth gape open wide and eat him quick." And suddenly there was a lightning. And, you know, you can do all these little looks at the sky and get a lot of cheap laughs. But you're in nature, and in this oasis in the middle of this crazy city, there's this beautiful bubble of Shakespeare being acted, and it's there's nothing like it.
Well, Oscar, you do have to worry about the weather. It can be brutally hot and humid or unseasonably cool, and it can begin raining in the middle of a show. Wasn't there a monsoon a few years ago?
We've had various weathers, but my favorite Delacorte weather story was actually with Kevin when we were doing Mother Courage, that I tried to stop the show, and Kevin and Meryl wouldn't let me. We'd stopped it once. We went back on. The rain was pouring down. I came down under the stage to the dressing room and said, "Listen, we really have to call the show." And they literally wouldn't let me. And they wrapped their microphones up in some kind of protective cloth so they wouldn't get electrocuted. And then when the rain even slowed down, Meryl went out and mopped the stage. And they continued performing.
That was in character.
It was amazing. Mm. Yeah. They continued performing
like
in a downpour.
Wiping up the blood on the battlefield.
And my favorite single moment was during the Solomon song when there was a snow effect. This was George Wolfe's production, beautiful production. And there was a snow effect where the snow was supposed to be on them. But because the wind was blowing so hard, the snow actually blew up stage and then came back over the top of the stage. And therefore, you couldn't see that it was a snow effect. You couldn't see where it was coming from. And there was a moment sitting in the audience where you could feel that the entire audience went, "Oh, my God, now it's snowing." it was like the plagues. And the ovation at the end of that evening was the most heartfelt I've ever heard from an audience.
We had Anne Hathaway here a few years ago. She talked about raccoons coming out on the stage while she was performing.
Absolutely.
Sometimes on cue. Sometimes late.
So what happens? You're doing Friends, Romans, Countrymen, and out comes a raccoon.
Friends, Romans, Countrymen, and
friends.
Fauna.
Yeah.
And then there is sirens, dogs barking, babies crying, helicopters overhead.
But look,
a lot more than just a cell phone.
Wall of sound around you in a way that protects you from.
Although the helicopters can be like large mosquitoes at the picnic,
when the helicopters are coming from the Hamptons to land on the west side and they don't bother to avoid the Delacorte, there's a certain amount of class resentment that seeps through the theater. But the other thing I want to say about that, Leonard, which is I think is important, is it's in a way they're distractions and just events. But the other thing is that they make you aware constantly that you are in a park in the middle of the city, and that feeling of being at the center of New York City is in a way analogous to feeling like you are at the center of the life of the culture, which, of course, the incredible diversity of the audience also gives you, and that's a beautiful thing.
And there's also something that looks like a castle behind the stage, which
is a castle, Belvedere Castle.
Yeah, so it lends itself to so many of these productions.
And I think as well, speaking to your point, Kevin, too, to take that a little further, it's very empowering as well for an actor, for a performer, that we suspend disbelief and we think all of these things are within us as well and being expressed through us. And so, when you're, standing on, about 20, 30 feet above the stage and, Friends, Romans, Countrymen, it's like you're, speaking to the entire city from this central point, and it really is extraordinarily, at least, it seems so anyway, extraordinarily powerful for an actor.
And now, the star, with the stars and the moon up above, or no moon, there's so many references, and instead of, and just to be able to look up and see, this majestical roof fretted with golden fire, or just a few,
And it's magical clouds for the audience because it's not not a stage set. This is the real thing.
But I think it's a rare opportunity for an actor to take in the theater as much as one does at the Delacorte, and to take in the audience as well, that they become part of the scenic environment. It's a quite rare thing.
Now, it is free, but what about the gala? Is the gala going to be held at the Delacorte?
The gala is going to be at the Delacorte on the night of June 18th.
It's not going to be free.
It is not going to be free. It is what allows the theater to be free the rest of the summer.
So if I want to buy a ticket, are there still tickets available?
There are, and you can just call the public theater. There's not many tickets available. There are a few. And I would just ask everybody who calls to remember that the money that you pay for this gala is what allows your fellow New Yorkers to go all summer. 100,000 of them will see the park for free this summer. And, of course, we need to raise the money to make that happen.
And we will have a link to your the PAP on the Public Theater on our website at WMIC. We'll continue our conversation with Oscar Eustace, the artistic director of the Public Theater, and actors Jeffrey Wright and Kevin Kline, celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Delacorte Theater. The Delacorte Theater, which is older than the PAP. The Public Theater on Lafayette.
That's correct.
We'll find out a little more about that history after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with actors Kevin Kline, Jeffrey Wright, two actors who have appeared in a number of the productions of the Free Shakespeare in the Park program, now celebrating, more than 50 years, 50 years at the Delacorte Theater. Also with us is Oscar Eustace, who's the artistic director of the Public Theater. So, Oscar, can you tell us a bit about how Joe Papp came to start the Free Shakespeare program? It began in 1954, 8 years before Delacorte was built.
It began as the Shakespeare Workshop. It began with him working on Shakespeare with actors. He'd come out of the Actors Laboratory in Los Angeles when he came out of the Navy. He joined what was essentially a group of group theater refugees on the West Coast. So very political. He was a member of the Communist Party. He worked on Shakespeare at the Actors Lab as well as on Stanislavski work. Came East, was working as a stage manager for CBS Television and started the Shakespeare Workshop. And it grew rapidly into something that, again, just caught the attention of the city. His first performances were in the East River Amphitheater down on the Lower East Side.
And they were just being done on flatbed trucks?
Well, the East River Amphitheater had actually been built by Robert Moses for Al Smith, because Al Smith had grown up in that neighborhood, and that was the very first site. But then rapidly Joe got the idea of going out to the boroughs and playing in the parks, and that was on the back of a flatbed truck.
It is so appropriate, because Robert Moses, if you read the Robert Caro book, is a Shakespearean character.
No question. No question. Yeah.
So who is Delacorte? Who's George Delacorte?
George Delacorte was a publisher who George and Valerie, his wife, who just died this past year, unfortunately, made a really astonishing leadership gift at the time to allow the Delacorte Theater to be built. He also built the Alice in Wonderland statues in Central Park, and the Delacorte clock at the zoo is a gift of George Delacorte.
And the building went up 5 years before the Public Theater's current home on Lafayette Street opened in 1967. So for those 5 years, was the Delacorte the home base of Public Theater?
Absolutely. It was both the center of the Public Theater, but really the opening of the public downtown, because up until 1967, we'd been the New York Shakespeare Festival. When Joe opened the Public Theater downtown, he had a kind of leap of the imagination that I think is still the most brilliant thing he ever did, which is to recognize that it wasn't enough to just deliver the greatest art to the people, which that was a great thing to do. But what he needed to do is actually take the voice of the people and put it on stage. And he realized that what he needed to do is actually get a theater devoted to new work and new plays that would mean that the people themselves could add to the canon, not simply appreciate the canon. And the fact that the Public Theater opened in 1967 with Hair, sort of extraordinary. It's the first thing Joe produced that wasn't Shakespeare, mm-hmm. was Hair. Amazing.
But before Hair, it may be hard to remember now, but there was a time when Shakespeare was seen as a kind of educational medicine, good for you, but not for fun. I guess it's because they forced us to read Julius Caesar in high school. Could have done a different one of the plays. To what extent was Joe Papp responsible for changing that idea, and why was it so important to him? Did you speak to him at all, Kevin? Did you speak to him, Jeffrey?
No, not in that regard. I actually, my experience with Joe was auditioning for him with my first audition in New York, and he didn't give me the job, so we didn't have a conversation after that. Kevin might be able to...
Auditioning for Joe was my last audition in New York. Once he didn't cast me, I gave up acting and became a director.
Wow. It was my first audition, too.
But he hired you.
Well, to carry a spear. And then over the years, I would show up here and there. I understudied Raul Julia in the great production of Three Penny Opera that Richard Foreman did at Lincoln Center when Joe was running Lincoln Center. And I would meet him over the years, and he'd always say, nice to meet you. So I obviously left no impression until we did Pirates of Penzance. And then he said, have you ever thought of doing Shakespeare? I think he thought I was a Gilbert and Sullivan guy, which I was not. Nothing against Gilbert and Sullivan, but it was a one-off for me. I said, well, that's actually what I'm quite interested in. And so we started doing Shakespeare, and we got to be closer and closer after many. I would no sooner open one Shakespeare, but he would come backstage and exact a commitment from me for same time next year, whatever, now we're going to do this, right? And I went, yeah.
So you've done 9 altogether.
I believe so.
Yeah. Well, the first, as we mentioned earlier, was The Merchant of Venice with George C. Scott and James Earl Jones, who were not stars, you point out, at the time. But was it difficult in those days to get major film stars to perform in Central Park? Because today it seems like everybody wants to do it.
It doesn't always feel that way when you're sitting at my desk, Leonard. but what's true that's changed, and I think this is due to what the Public Theater has done in the last 50 years, not only what Joe did, but what George Wolfe did after him, was making the Delacorte a place that is central to the American acting profession. And actually, these gentlemen here to my right and left, Jeffrey and Kevin, have had a lot to do with that. I think there is now an understanding that if you want to be considered a great American actor, the Delacorte is the place to sort of lay down the gauntlet and prove that you are that. And I get that from a lot of young actors now that I'm sure Joe didn't get 50 years ago. And it's, I hope, true.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that Joe opened, I mean, his door was open. It was always an inclusive theater of the people, for the people. And I think because you had been in a movie didn't necessarily preclude you. There was nothing snobbish about it. I mean, there used to be, I think, definitely you're either a stage actor or a film actor. But I think like any other wall, Joe tore that down.
Now, we're talking about a pretty big theater, aren't we?
Almost 2,000 seats. Yeah.
So, because you have to be concerned about how the people in the last row, I think it's a W or an X or something like
exactly.
that, actually can see what's going on without binoculars.
No question. And, you know, it does reward a certain size. It rewards actors who are capable of holding that stage. It's a big stage to hold. And, again, I think it's a great exercise room for acting.
When Oscar says a big stage to hold, Jeffrey, we're talking about something larger than any indoor stage could be.
Sure, but as well.
So you're moving around a lot.
You are, but the stage extends beyond the audience as well, and so there is a scale to it. And, of course, you have these great epic, you know, plays, epic stories that lend themselves to that type of dynamic. So it's really, you know, wonderfully harmonious in that way, but the issue, as opposed to being seen, is being heard as well. You know, these microphones that you wear are, you know, somewhat controversial. But still, there's a sense
Well, there's no way you could be heard by the back row.
Well, it depends.
Here.
It depends.
Well, Sophocles, of course, didn't have microphones available.
But he had an extraordinary acoustical, magical theater, and they wore these kind of megaphones also in their masks, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And much quieter helicopters than those days.
And yes. Then what about lighting? You begin in daylight or twilight and end in darkness.
Mm. Which is one of the beautiful things about it. The transition from being able to see the park and the city and all the people in the seats next to you to as the evening goes on, you get more and more focused by the stage lights to what is happening on stage is a beautiful journey that we take on every one of the shows. We also always know when the show needs to start and when the lights are going to take hold. It varies over the course of the summer. It tends to be about 8:45 when the lights really take hold. And certain shows we've started late. For instance, the Scottish play, the last time we did, we started at 8:30 precisely because we wanted the lights to take hold earlier.
Now you have to call it the Scottish play here as well? I thought you only couldn't say it in the theater.
That was like tacky theater habit. I mean Macbeth.
A listener in Brooklyn left this comment. Last year during Measure for Measure, there was a scene when Isabella would come on stage to confront Claudio. While she was ascending a staircase, it started raining. After a delay, the rain stopped. The show started. As soon as Isabella started down the stairs, the rain started again. I was at that performance, by the way. The whole sequence repeated again. Finally, when Isabella would come on stage, the crowd would go wild. The rain held off for a bit, but eventually the performance was called off, at which point the actors came out on stage and clapped for the audience. We sat through at least four rain delays, and it was a moving theater experience, this person writes.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, it's, you know, we see it feelingly. There's no way that you can sit through a performance at the Delacorte and not be aware of the audience, not be aware of the city, not be aware of being part of a community that's larger than yourself. And that experience is as crucial a part of the evening as the play itself.
Another person writes in, Abby in Manhattan, talks about a performance of Much Ado where you came out at one point and began singing or dancing to Singing in the Rain. Do you remember that, Kevin?
Good God, no. No.
Well, this person remembers. Senator Moynihan was there, and he was booed when he left because it was raining.
There were we had a lot of rain that summer, and I remember using it. I don't. That's a bit much singing. I mean, one can ignore it or not, but I don't think I burst into Singing in the Rain. But listen, if that person said, maybe that's what they heard. But I do remember doing Henry V, and there were several stops and starts. And by the time we got to the St. Crispin's Day speech, there were about 300 people left sitting under their umbrellas while this gentle rain fell. And when I got to We Few, We Happy Few, We Band of Brothers, it was absolutely that. And we were there, and we were going to see it through to the end, drizzle or no. And it was memorable.
Kevin Kline, Jeffrey Wright are here, along with Oscar Eustis, the artistic director of the Public Theater. We're celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Delacorte, which is actually next Monday, the 18th. Mm-hmm. Aren't there something like 38 plays by Shakespeare? Have all of them been performed at the Delacorte?
37, is the currently accepted.
Well, I was including the Arthur Phillips play.
Please don't. I adore Arthur, but that play was not written by Shakespeare. And I actually don't know if they've all been done at the Delacorte.
So
we've certainly done them at the Public.
Yeah. Because some of them have been done more than once. And I always wonder why this one and not that one. And you've done some Greek plays. You've done
Mother Courage. We did The Seagull. We've done Molière, Don Juan. I mean, there's always a reason, and the reason sometimes is excellent. And ever since I've been artistic director, the reasons have been excellent. but it's the beautiful thing is the Shakespeare canon is a small enough canon, and every play is worth doing. So you never make a mistake doing one of those plays.
But I would assume that there's more pressure to do the favorites like Hamlet and Midsummer Night's Dream, Romeo and Juliet, than Timon of Athens and Coriolanus.
Well, yes and no. It's funny because one doesn't experience pressure in a theater that gives away its tickets quite the way you experience pressure in a theater that sells tickets. For example, this summer, I can give you all sorts of wonderful reasons why we're doing As You Like It that has to do with the forest and the woods, and we're doing Sondheim's Into the Woods, and that's going to be such a beautiful
pairing. Are you doing them you can't do them rep as you've been doing plays.
We're not doing them rep, although we are definitely doing them in dialogue with each other. But one of the big reasons we're doing As You Like It is we had a Rosalind. And 2 years ago, it was clear to me that Lily Rabe was ready to do Rosalind, and so we scheduled it.
I think Lily Rabe is ready to do anything now. She's one incredible actress.
I think so, too.
Her performance in Merchant of Venice was extraordinary. And that Merchant of Venice actually moved to Broadway. How many have other productions also moved to Broadway?
Well, a number. Penzance, Drood, The Tempest. Yes, we've met Hair.
Much Ado that A.J. Antoon directed with Sam Waterston.
So there's been a number that moved.
But Into the Woods will be the first Sondheim musical performed at the Delacorte.
It will be indeed.
Who's starring in that?
Amy Adams, Donna Murphy, Gideon Glick, Dennis O'Hare. It's a great cast.
As You Like It, when was that first performed? Do we know?
1599. I wasn't
the
there.
The Delacorte. This production features original bluegrass music composed by Steve Martin.
Yeah, that's called for in the script.
Shakespeare said Steve Martin comes out with a banjo.
It's actually one of the beautiful ways that, again, I like to think this is a Public Theater specialty, because all of the walls are torn down between high and low art, between comedy and classics. And Dan Sullivan wanted to set this production in the early 19th century in the south of the United States. And that was a banjo playing time, and we happened to know a really good banjo player, Steve Martin, and we started talking to him, and dang if we didn't end up with a beautiful bluegrass score.
Jeffrey, are you going to be at the gala as well?
Yes.
Are we seeing a full production of Romeo?
That's a good question. What are we seeing?
We're going to see Jeffrey Wright do an extraordinary Tybalt, what we're going to see. And
Okay. Basically,
it should be clear that the two gentlemen here with me have another record, which is they've turned me down more often than any other actors in the American theater. Even though they've been there a lot, they also say no a lot. So this was the way that we could get him back on stage. We're going to see one night.
Well, I'll be there. I'll be there then.
Thank you.
And who else will be in that production?
Oh, well, Meryl Streep, of course, is going to be in the production. Sam Waterston. We've got a Felicia Rashad.
Chris Walken.
Chris Walken is playing Mercutio. It's an extraordinary
cast. It is a staged reading. There will not. Mm-hmm. Don't look for extraordinary sword play. Only word play, I think.
But you do sword play well, don't you, Kevin?
But not in a reading, not with a book in one hand, right? Saber in the other.
For me, this evening is both a chance to celebrate the amazing actors who have come up at the Public Theater. Just really, it's all-star in the fullest sense of that word. But it's also a chance to see actors play roles that we don't normally get them to see. I happen to think Kevin and Meryl is brilliant casting as Romeo and Juliet. I think they'll both be exquisite in the parts.
I hadn't realized that Chris was playing Mercutio.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that is a perfect match.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to be pretty exciting.
Very.
Pretty exciting.
Now, the main theater on Lafayette Street has been going through a restoration. When will that be completed?
We're going to be completing it in the late summer, and October will be the month when we have a series of events reopening it to the public, and or rather rededicating it because we've never closed throughout the 4 years of the renovation.
The new musical, February House, which the Public commissioned as part of its musical theater initiative, will be ending its run this Sunday. Might it come back at some point?
It's certainly possible. It's a beautiful musical. The thing I'm sort of proudest of is the authors, the book writer Seth Bokley and Gabriel Kahane, the composer. This is really their first show, and it's a beautiful show, and it's the announcement of, I think, two talents who we're going to be seeing an awful lot of in the years ahead.
And what else, other than appearing at the gala, what else are you doing these days, Jeffrey?
Am I doing? I have a couple films that are in the can, as they say, that will be out later this year. One about New York City that we shot in New Orleans. and another that's called Broken City, kind of a neo-noir, corrupt New York story. And then there's another film based on a novel called A Single Shot, set in Appalachia, a much smaller film that we shot a couple months ago as well.
Kevin, anything in French coming up?
Oui. That was it. That was my French, my contribution to French culture for the year. Actually, there is. No, I might do a French film
later this summer.
Well, you did one. I did one.
You were here to talk about it.
Oh, that's right. Yes. In English. reading scripts and happily between engagements.
And meanwhile, you have Romeo coming.
I have quite a bit on my plate. Actually, the Monday after we do that, I'm also doing a benefit for the acting company, my other alma mater, my other home. Besides the Shakespeare Festival, Diane Wiest and I are reading letters between Chekhov and his eventual wife, Olga Knipper. So there's that. I'm just doing benefits now.
And then
they're very short runs.
And then, of course, there'll be occasional opportunities to turn Oscar down.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for Oscar to call.
The last thing I said was, Jeffrey, why don't you just write down the name of what you'll say yes to so I can offer you that.
Oscar Eustace is the artistic director of the Public Theater. And Jeffrey Wright and Kevin Kline are two of the actors who have appeared quite often in Public Theater productions. And when they're not turning Oscar Eustace down, they will be participating in the gala for the 50th anniversary of the Delacorte next Monday, June 18th, 1962 is when it first opened. Right. And my great thanks to all of you for being on our show today.
Thank you.
Thank
Always
you.
A pleasure.
Thanks very much. We'll be right back.